You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera and everything in between, if you have a piece of hunting gear or a piece of hunting equipment that needs a battery, Interstate Batteries has got you covered. You can go to a local retail store, or you can go visit online at interstatebatteries.com. They have thousands of local retail shops all over the U.S., so you can go there as well. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Woo!
1, 2.
This is the Hunting Gear Podcast, and just like the title implies, we cover all things hunting gear and equipment. From discussions with the top manufacturers to product reviews from past hunting experiences, our goal is to provide you with reliable and unbiased product information in hopes of educating you on new products and assisting in future purchases. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and this episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast starts right now. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Hunting Gear Podcast, and once again, I am joined by the co-host of all co-hosts, Bob Polanic. How you doing, man?
Thanks for the introduction. Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good. Opening season is, I guess, opening day for Michigan and Iowa. That's our respective states. Is very, very close, almost so that you can taste it. Are you jacked for the upcoming season?
I am. I am very ready to put some meat in the freezer. I have lowered my expectations on goals rather, and yeah, I'm ready to put the broadheads, the arrows, to use this year.
Is this a year of I'm just gonna shoot shit year?
Oh yeah, big time. My buddies have all been giving me a hard time because, like, 3 years ago, I was all like, 120 or better, or 130 or better. And then last year, I shot like I shot maybe a 95 inch 8 point.
Yeah.
And they were all just like, I didn't find it. Yeah, I don't even think he died, actually. It was a long story. But yeah, they're all like, what happened? And I was like, dude, I haven't been shooting deer and I'm sick of it. So yeah.
Sometimes, you know, I hate to say it and come off like this evil person, but sometimes you just got to kill shit.
I totally agree. I 100%. I killed a couple of does, but yeah, just to get some meat in the freezer. But yeah, kind of recapped on a different podcast, but yeah, just went on an elk hunt and did not kill an elk. So yeah, the freezer has got plenty of space.
Right. And on the elk hunt that I just got back from, we had a little running joke at camp because no one even got within shooting range of an elk, that I feel sorry for the first doe that walks by in October. she does not know what's coming, and it's about 500 grains of aluminum and carbon, and
yep.
she's just gonna be tasty, is what I'll say.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I can't wait to just never fresh, never frozen inner loins and back straps. Not even gonna let them hit the freezer.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
Oh yeah. Yep. So they'll probably be on the grill before the meat even cools down.
If all goes as planned. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Well, today we are going to talk once again, as always, about gear. And I want to talk about what we have used on our Western trips this year and recap the durability issues, talk about what we liked and what we disliked, maybe about something that we tried this year and worked or didn't work, or things that we want to change on as far as our gear for upcoming seasons. Now, you went on this elk hunt with your wife, and she was actually the hunter, and you were kind of the caller/guide, right?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Full-time caller, and then she's a hunter. She didn't need much guidance, but yeah, just a little bit of help with, like, the how to set up with the caller shooter situation. But right. Yeah.
Okay. So from a gear standpoint, did you guys sleep in like a hotel or cabin, or were you guys in tents?
We had every intention to, you know, bivy style hunt, just for a few days to give her that experience. But, all the elk we ran into were low and at very easy access points. So we ended up staying in the cabin the whole time. But, I've stayed in tents before. If the elk are higher or further away from all your access points, it's a great option. I think it's a lot of fun. But to handcuff yourself, the way we did it is we checked out a big ridge our first day. And typically that's where majority of the elk are and a lot of the bigger bulls. And there was just no elk sign. There was no, you know, fresh droppings, hardly any fresh tracks. And it was quiet the day we did our big loop, which is our first day. And it was like, well, I'm not going to go hike, you know, 45 pounds worth of food and gear up here if the elk aren't up here. So we kept searching for them, and we found them in lower, easy to access country. And it was like, there's not really a point to, I mean, you hike a half a mile to a mile from the trailhead and you're into respectable bull elk.
Gotcha.
So,
all right. So no tent, you camped out at a cabin. All right.
Yep.
Same as me. So, I don't want to talk about tents, and I don't want to talk about sleeping pads and shit like that, because, you know, we didn't use them. But let's just talk about clothing, gear. I know we've already done an episode where we talked about the clothing that we wore, socks, boots. We've talked about boots, we talked about socks, but I want to talk about performance of what you have and if there's anything that you are going to change next year. So why don't you just really quickly, what do you have for your clothing and your socks and your boots? And then we can get into the discussion of how they perform and if you're going to be keeping them.
All righty. I'll start from boots and go on up. Boots were Crispy Boots. They're the Crispy Summits for September. They're the lightweight version. I don't think you can beat those. You don't need anything insulated for – I was in Idaho. You just don't really need much more than that. Even if you do get a bunch of rain and snow, you're moving around enough that your feet are warm with, Crispy does make those 200 gram insulated boots or maybe 400 gram, but I had the uninsulated version. Just a pair of, Smart Wool Merino socks, their lightweight version. Went through about 3-4 pairs of those over 8 days. If I would have known that I was going to hunt from a cabin, I would have brought 8 pairs, not 4. Those get a little nasty after just one day with my feet. But, the first couple days it was warmer. Mornings were always in the 30s, but days always got up into high 60s or low 70s for probably the first 3 days. So I wore the Apex pants by Sika Gear. Really liked those. Just had like a Core 4 element. So I think that's the name of it. I had a belt, just a fabric belt. And then for base layer on the top, it was a Sika lightweight Merino. And then over that was the Apex hoodie. And then over that was the Jetstream vest. And that pretty much was all I really wore for the first few days. And just a, you know, Sika cap.
Yeah.
If it was, I don't know, down around 30 in the morning, I'd hike in with all that same stuff on, plus a Kelvin active jacket. It's not down. They're like synthetic, like Polar Tech, lightweight, great option, very breathable. And I would usually, if I was wearing that, I'd usually shed that layer by about 9 a.m.
Yeah.
For a bino harness, I use it's called Marsupial. It's a Marsupial Gear bino harness. It's got a magnet flap. So It is quiet, and as long as you kind of when you pull the flap off and it opens away from you, and then the flap folds underneath the bino harness, and there's another magnet that keeps that flap down. I've heard some guys complain about those magnets. They can like make like a snapping sound. As long as you're paying attention, it's very silent. I would say, if we're going to get into stuff, we'll change. I'll just talk about that later.
Yeah, so let's just talk about the performance then. Okay, so that's the rundown of the gear.
Yep.
Did you feel that the gear that you were wearing performed like it should have?
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Okay. Now, so that's an easy answer, right? Yes, it performed. Has the durability stood the test of time? Because some of these products have you used multiple years?
The Apex hoodie, that was the second year that I had used that. And that has like, I think the body of it is Merino. And then the underarm, the arms are, the inside of the arms is Merino, and the outside of the arms is like a soft shell fabric.
Yeah.
The underarms underneath my elbows, that's starting to get very, fuzzy. What's the name for that?
Starting to fray.
Yeah. Fray and kind of like ball up and stuff like that. Yeah. So gotcha. I'm not real impressed with that just after 2 years. And of course I'm only using that for a week each year. And so basically after 14 days, you know, it's starting to start.
And that's a $200 jacket.
Yeah. Yeah. It's starting to pill.
Yeah.
That's the term for it. So I get really pilly. So I wasn't impressed with that, but, other than that, yeah, everything performed.
Boots performed any wear and tear on the, like the soles stood up to all that.
Yep. I'm on my second year with those, and I wear those a lot. I wear them in the summertime on camping trips and stuff like that. And those are still, I mean, I've probably got at least, 250 miles on those, and they're holding up just fine. I'll get at least one more year out of them, if not two.
Right. Right. All right. So, of what you've talked about there, boots, socks, clothing, are you going to be up? Are you thinking you're going to go a different route? You're going to stick with what you have? You're going to get something different, try something different for your next Western hunt?
Well, so it rained. So that was just the first 3 days. It rained on the fourth day, and I started using the Sika Cloudburst, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And gosh, that is so loud. It's so loud. I couldn't even stand. I mean, I also wore the Sika Gators. I don't know what they're, I think they're like the Thunderhead or something like that. Those worked really well. Loved those. So I would wear, so once it started raining, it obviously got colder. So I switched out the Apex pants and wore the Mountain pants. And then I had the Gators on over the Mountain pants, over the boots, you know, and then I had the Cloudburst pants and jacket on, and it just was so loud. If you have the hood up on the rain jacket, I mean, all you can hear is the raindrops hitting the hood. You can't hear anything. So right.
That's my biggest pet peeve about wearing rain gear. Like I wore my jacket, but I had to like have my ears outside of the hood.
Yeah.
Because when the drops hit the jacket, it's so loud you can't even hear yourself think.
Right, exactly. So, but it kept me dry. So,
right.
So it performed how I wanted.
Right. Okay. So any thing in this trip where you're just like, screw this, I'm getting rid of it and I'm getting new.
I've got to figure out something with my bino harness because of those magnets. So I use Onyx.
Yep.
And with Onyx, you can click like the point that finds you.
Yep.
And then if you click it again, it will show you what direction you're facing. And then it will get, you know, north will rotate to wherever north is, but it will show you where you're aiming. With those magnets right at my chest, right where I hold my phone, it was throwing that off. So I could not even use that option.
Oh, really? That's crazy.
Yeah. 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 I don't know if it was the magnet. All I know is that my wife was using Onyx on her phone. She did not have any magnets in her bino harness and she had no problem. Gotcha. And it didn't matter. It didn't matter what I did. I turned my phone on and off. I recalibrated my compass. It just, you know, it's an iPhone 8. It shouldn't have any issues. The only thing I can think of is those magnets were throwing it off.
Huh. That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you probably weren't to a stage where you felt like you were going to get lost any time soon. But I can see how if you're trying to side hill a big piece of land and you want to end up in one place, I can see how that would be a distraction if you're going too high or too low on the face of a mountain.
Oh, it got me all turned around in the dark. We were hiking out in the dark one night and we went down a drainage ditch that was the wrong drainage ditch. And
that sucks.
It sucked bad. Yeah. It was not good. Not good.
All right. So your bino harness and the magnet issue. Anything else?
As far as clothing, no. I, for whatever reason, I don't know if it was just because it was so wet one day, but my boots, the inside of my boots did get wet. And I don't know if it was more so. I wasn't wearing rain pants. I was just wearing the mountain pants with the gaiters. And I don't know if just like the moisture that my knees and thighs were gathering was traveling down the inside of like through the fabric. Inside the gaiters down into my socks and my boot. I don't know if that's how they got wet or if it was just so dang wet that, you know, at some point it just water starts seeping through. But yeah. It only happened one time, and it was, you know, it was after hiking around for 5 hours in the rain that my feet got wet. But I was able to dry my boots out and I was fine for the rest of the trip.
Yeah. And I think that's a perfect transition to me talking about mine, because I experienced the same thing. I had on the wet days, I had some moisture in my boots, but on the dry days, I didn't. So I don't know if there's some like air balance thing that's going on there, where if it's really humid and wet outside, it's not pulling that, it's not allowing the moisture front that's created in the boot to be pulled out, maybe. I don't know. That's just a guess at this point. But I also had a pair of Crispies on this hunt. This is the second year I used them. I think I'm going to have to get a different boot. I think I had the Thors, and I'm going to have to get a different boot for next year. This boot will now be an Iowa early season outdoor type boot. You know, hey, let's go shed hunting type of boot. I feel that it performed awesome the first year. It performed awesome early season while I was deer hunting. It performed awesome while I was training. But when I got up into the mountains, I started to experience, I don't know what it's called, like boot growth, I think it's called, where I was tightening my laces and they became, and because of the boot actually expanding or growing or whatever, it was, I don't know, like my boot was becoming loose. Like I was having to stop and retie the laces over and over and over again. And when I was side hilling, there's a lot of slippage. When I was coming down, I feel like my heel wasn't getting locked into place. And I experienced a little bit of that last year, but not so much this year. I feel like I was having to stop and tie my boots because I didn't have the tightness that I needed, or the heel that was locked in place. You know what I mean?
Yep.
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 So the boots, you know, if I walked away with a new pair of the same boots, I think I would be fine, but I might try something a little different. I might stick with Crispy, but just a different pair. I might try leather. There's a couple other boots I want to take a look at, but I feel that I'm gonna buy a new pair of boots before the next year's Western hunt.
Okay.
Socks. I stuck with the exact same pair, And I actually bought another pair, so I rotated them in and out every single day, let them get dry, you know, on their off days. But I went with an Alterra. It's called the Alterra Prevail sock. It's an alpaca fiber. It's really, really comfortable, really good. It's not a thin sock, but it's not a thick, but it's a medium sock. It just felt comfortable in my boot all day long. It wicks moisture away really well. So my inside of my boot some days were a little moist, but my feet were never wet. And that's big when you're out there all day long, stomping through some creeks and stuff like that, or walking through wet grass. This year, like I said, similar to you, I added a pair of gaiters, and because I was last year walking through creeks and walking through wet grass in the morning, I felt that those gaiters really kept the water out of my lower pants, which I think sometimes that crept into my boot. So wearing those gaiters I got them from Kennetrek. I bought them off Amazon, but they were the Kennetrek brand. And they did really well. They Velcro in the front of the boot, and they did their job. They kept the bottom of my pants really dry, walking through wet grass and through the creeks. They kept my socks dry. They kept, and I think that kept moisture out of my boot as well. So really happy with those. And I think going into my South Dakota hunt and future Western hunts, I think that's going to be a staple on how I control moisture in and out of my feet. I think it did that good of a job. And then, you know, similar to you, I rock Sitka. I wore a Core lightweight base layer every single day. It did its job. I wore the mountain pants every single day. They did their job. This is all the same gear that I wore the previous year. The first day it was somewhat warm, so I just wore the Apex hoodie as a base layer. I really like that piece. It's going to be a staple even into archery season, I think. And I'm going to be wearing a base layer underneath of it, the Apex hoodie over, and I'll wear that until I get cold and then layer up from there. Then when we stopped, I would throw on my Calvin Light vest, and then over top of that, my mountain jacket. And that kept me warm and for the most part dry throughout the entire trip. I didn't need to go any heavier than that. There was a morning where it was down into the low 30s, high 20s, just one day. And I got a little chilly, but when the sun came up, I just stepped into the sun and it warmed me, you know, warmed me right up. You know, I wore just this random hat that I have. I said earlier when you were bitching about the rain jacket, that is going to be the next piece of hunting gear that I invest in, is going to be a good rain system. I don't know if I necessarily need the jacket. I might, but definitely, or the pants, but definitely the jacket. That jacket that I have, it cost me like $30, and it is a $30 rain jacket. I mean, it does not breathe at all, so the moisture from my body gets trapped in, and it actually makes like a layer of wetness inside, and it blocks the rain off, but it doesn't do a great job of it. So there is some moisture that gets in through it, and I think I'm on my last year of that. I'm gonna bring it to South Dakota and see how it performs, but I don't think it's gonna be making many more trips after that, other than to maybe the timber for a sprinkle here and there for whitetail season. But I think the next big investment that I make is going to be a really high quality rain jacket, just because these short showers are great, but if I ever went up and had to endure an all day rain, I think I would have been in trouble. And I would have got wet, and I would have got cold, and then I would have had to get off the mountain back to the camp. So I think the next thing that I really look into is going to be a better rain system. I'll probably just end up buying pants and a jacket just in case. I was up there with a guy who had a QU system, and it was badass because it was like tearaway pants. You could literally zip them up and down all the way off, so you don't have to take your boots off and you don't have to take anything off. You just throw them on, zip them up, and you're good to go. The zippers come all the way down the side. He had a really good jacket that went along with those pants. I don't know the name of them at this point, but he was telling me that they performed really well for him, and he showed me the inside of his and his jacket. It was solid dry. I think it had a layer on the inside that wasn't the rain jacket. It wasn't just like straight whatever that material is, synthetic rubber. I don't even know what they're made out of, some plastic, but it was some fabric on the inside. And I think what that allowed was the garment to breathe. Right. So I'm going to be looking into some rain jackets. And then as far as gear is concerned, clothing is concerned, I think that's it. I'll probably be buying a new pair of boots. I'll probably be buying, because, you know, boots have a life expectancy anyway. I noticed, and it's probably how I took care of them. I am definitely that guy who wears a pair of boots. When you're done wearing them, you just throw them right into the, into the garage, and they sit there with mud and junk on them for however long until the next time that you wear them. Right.
Sure.
Yep. So I did notice a little bit of cracking in the sole, but I don't think it's going to hinder me. I think there's probably something I need to do. I think they have like conditioning, some kind of conditioning that I need to do to the boot in order to get it, to make it last longer. But, new pair of boots, new rain outfit for next year. And, I think I'm going to be able to get away with the same, clothing that I've been wearing the previous 2 years.
Gotcha. Yeah. I think that I might change, the mountain pants. I don't know if Sick is going to update those, but I like how the Apex pant fits a lot better than the mountain pant. Mountain pant's a lot more baggy. And I noticed that if you were kind of, just hiking down a trail at a quicker pace, maybe it's on the way back to the truck or in the morning on the way in, but the swishing of the pants was kind of a unnecessary noise, and I think it was all due to because it's just a touch baggier. Those Apex pants are cut more. I'm not gonna say they're cut like a skinny jean or anything like that, but they're more tapered. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did notice that. On top of that, they don't have, I don't know how much those mountain pants cost. Probably $200, but like they don't even have a spot on the pocket, like your hip pocket for like where you'd put your hand for like your knife to catch well. A lot of pants have that integrated in where they have like a little, a tougher piece of fabric right there where the bottom of your pocket meets your pants.
Yeah.
They don't have that. That was kind of, which is not a big deal, but, I just made it so my knife wouldn't stay, just a pocket knife wouldn't really stay on my hip very well.
Yeah.
So maybe they'll update the pattern. I think they came out with, there's some other pants they have that I might try. So that's the only thing I might change around.
Yeah. Okay. Now overall, what is, did your wife have like gear from Sitka for women? Did she rock that stuff too? Yeah. How did she like that?
She liked it a lot. She doesn't like their camo pattern, but, other than that, no, she liked how it performed. She had the Timberline pant, which essentially is the mountain pant, but it's got like the waterproof knees and the waterproof seat. I noticed the same thing, like kind of where, so on the seat of the pants, that like waterproof gray area, if you look on Sika's website, it's very identifiable what pants I'm talking about, but the seat has like a gray spot on them where like the reinforced butt part. Where that kind of rubs together on the upper thigh, that makes a little like swishing sound. I noticed that last year with my buddy that wears like the men's version of the Timberline pants. That makes a little bit of noise when you're walking. She then wore, I think a Merino base. layer, the Sika Merino base layer for women. And then on top of that, she actually wore her like Whitetail Fanatic hoodie.
Yeah.
Just the lightweight one, which is essentially almost like an Apex hoodie, you know? And then, yeah, just a vest, kind of the same setup as what I had. Just the Jetstream vest. She wore the mountain jacket because the mountain jacket came with a hood. The Jetstream jacket for women does not come with a hood, which is kind of, I don't know why they did that. The men's Jetstream comes with a hood. So, okay. And then she had the same rain gear, that Cloudburst stuff. She kind of said the same thing. It got the hood up very loud. But, and then as far as gloves go, I wore the Traverse gloves. They're not a lightweight, but they're not a heavyweight. They're not even a medium weight, but they fit really well. And the thumbs and the index finger made it where I could still use my Onyx on my phone.
That's a big thing.
Very nice.
Because
very nice.
I hate having to take my gloves off to activate my phone.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, and I was doing, I mean, I was raking trees every day. I was grabbing big sticks and, you know, half the time they're wet and stuff like that. And it's just a great protection layer for your hands when you're just, you know, ripping on branches and hitting trees and breaking branches and stuff like that. So yeah. I really liked those. She wore, I think on her left hand, which she holds her bow with her left hand, she wore the mountain glove. And then on the right hand, she wore the Whitetail Fanatic glove, you know, where it's got the thumb and index are just half finger.
Yeah.
So that was her setup and she liked that quite a bit.
Cool. All right. So I'm going to kick off like the rest of the gear. And I know that you didn't hunt. So like I said, we won't talk about that, but I'm going to say my backpack performed very well again. One thing that I've noticed is I have the Outdoorsman pack, the frame, with the Muley pack, which is a small, they have a variety of different packs, like packs that attach to the frame. So I have the smaller Muley pack and then I have the water bladder. I really like that system and how it works. And, they have a game bag, or it's like, it's called the meat sling that you attach to it. So if you, you can fix it flat and then you can put your pack and your water bladder over it. So that way, when you do kill and you do have meat to take back, that meat sling is already there on the pack and you can loosen it up to then throw the meat and everything in. And then you'd have to figure out, like, attach the pack portion of it to a different place on the pack. So that system works really good. One thing that I've noticed is over the years, similar to my boots, I have to continue tightening the belt part of it, like it slips. And I don't know if it's the actual buckles that aren't holding the belt or if it's the actual belt that is starting to wear on it. But I noticed that they have replacement buckles you can buy for that. I'm just trying to figure out if I need to replace the buckle or if it's the actual belt. The fabric still looks good that the belt portion is made out of. But it's just one thing I noticed that I had to keep continuing to tighten my belt. And again, a lot of that has to do with the terrain that we were in, right? I wasn't just hiking. I was climbing over deadfall and I was having to go like stand up straight and I was having to squat down and do all these different moves that I wouldn't say that when you're designing a pack that you're thinking about that, but it's something that I noticed.
Okay. Yeah. So I wore a backpack every day, as well. I wore the, Mystery Ranch Metcalf, I think it's called.
Yep.
Which is,
that was a finalist. That was a finalist for when I was looking for backpacks for a Western hunt, and that Metcalf made like one of the final cuts.
I highly recommend it. I've been using it for 2 years, and it's a great backpack. It whether you're gonna bring camp in for 5 days and you need the room for all that, And then you get, you know, your tent set up and all your food hung and all that type of stuff. And then you want to cinch it back down to where it can kind of become a day pack. The way like all the buckles work on it, it can collapse right back down to a very small pack. One thing about it, it only has one, or it's got two ways in. You can either go through the top, or there's only one zipper on the side. Both sides don't have a zipper, just one side has a zipper. So that can kind of, I mean, it's nice because it's simple. There's less to go wrong. I used to run a Tenzing 6000 that had zippers and compartments all over it. And after 2 years, like half the zippers had fallen apart, you know, had come apart where I couldn't even use them anymore. And then the lid system for the Metcalf, the way they designed that, it's not just one pocket on the lid. They divided it into two. So like as it like crowns over the top of your lid, it doesn't pull all that fabric tight. It's got its own two compartments. So you don't lose any space if you cinch that lid down on there. I'm doing a poor job of explaining it. You probably have to go to the website and look at it. But belt issue, no belt issue. I never really had to readjust it, maybe once a day or something like that. So yeah, it's a very, very nice pack. I'm very happy with it. Yeah. So, yeah, and it's got the meat shelf, kind of like what you're talking about. So if you do kill an elk, the bag does detach from the frame. It stays attached at the very bottom. There's a piece of fabric there. So it kind of just opens up. You put that meat quarter in, and then you put your bag back on. You kind of sandwich that quarter right in between the frame and the bag. And then that keeps the weight right on your back, which is where you're going to want it anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I know that for me on my pack, if I decided to do, I'd have to come up with something creative. I might have to go and buy. I like the frame, but I would need probably another pack that they offer a bigger square inch or cubic inch pack other than this day. This muley pack's basically a day pack. The cool thing out is you can take it off the frame and you can also wear it as its own pack. So okay. It has straps and another belt on it as well, but you can also take that off and buckle it to the frame. So I would probably, if I was going to start doing a lot more spike camps and camping and bringing a tent and a sleeping bag with me, I would probably need to do more of a bigger square inch or just probably play around with it, set it up to where I could fit all that extra gear on there, along with, you know, different layers, changes of clothes and food and all that stuff. But for the most part, it did what I wanted it to do while I was up there. Never got to shoot my bow or arrows, but and I don't want to jump to conclusions, but I got to figure out something with my arrows. I think I'm not 100% sure because it's a combination probably of my bow, which for all intents and purposes is working well. It's probably me, if I had to guess, or it's the combination of the four fletch arrow, the weight, and the four blade broadhead that it may be not tuning as well as what I liked. And like I said, it's probably operator error when it comes to that, because I went out and I shot last night, and I shot really well last night. And I don't know what the scenario is. It's something I got to look into, but I really want to figure out I want to try to find a 500 grain or over arrow setup that is tuned perfectly, that's got four fletches and a fixed blade up front. Like I said, I'm on my other podcast, I'm sponsored by Wasp, and I actually love the broadheads that these guys make. I just have to find out how to tune it right with the arrow that I've selected. And last year it worked perfect. This year was a different type of scenario. So I don't know if And plus, I'm the guy who likes to mess around and have a new setup every single year as far as arrows and broadheads are concerned, just because I like new things and like to test the weight and the speed and the accuracy. But ultimately, accuracy wins every time, and I want to be able to find the setup that fits my needs. So I might be messing around with my arrow setup next year.
Okay, gotcha.
But other than that, man, I mean, this trip, if anything, just solidified the brands that I was already using and saying that there were a good selection for what I needed that gear for. And I made a good decision other than my rain jacket. I think I'm really happy with everything that I used. This isn't going to be, we're 40 minutes in here and it's not like a groundbreaking episode. It's just kind of hey, we chose right type of deal.
Well, I've got a couple questions. Well, two things. One, yeah. I'll comment on my wife's bow setup real quick.
Yep.
She was shooting the Matthews Avail. I think she's got the 60-pound limbs on it. She had it turned up to she worked her way up to 55 pounds this summer.
Awesome.
Yeah, good for her. She's got a little shorter draw length, I think 25 inches, something like that. I don't know her arrow weight. She does shoot the Carbon Express Mayhem Hunters, which is a little heavier arrow. I think it's like 10 grains or 10.1 grains per inch. And then she was shooting a 125 grain G5 Striker. I think it's the version 2. And she screwed those on and she shot each one through each broadhead through a foam target, and they were all very accurate, and she was shooting at 30 yards. So that was good to see. There was no real tuning issues. They didn't fly. I think they hit a little high, but we're just not, we were testing them out when we were out there, and I don't know if she shot a little high just because the elevation and the thinner air. Not sure if that makes sense. I noticed that every time I practice with my bow, once I get out to Montana or Idaho, I always end up hitting just 2-3 inches high as well. So
yeah, I re-sight in my entire bow every time I go up to altitude.
Oh, do you really?
Yep. I shouldn't say re-sight it in, but that's ultimately what I'm doing, is because the last 2 years have proven that, when you're going from Iowa to 10,200 feet, the air's different, and whatever's flying through the air is going to be different. And I've had to adjust this year. I had to adjust probably 4 inches.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. What else was I going to say? Oh, what were you using a call with?
Oh yeah. I used a Primos cow call with a reed. Worked great. I used that last year too. I'm a big fan of it. And then I got a bugle tube this year that has a built-in reed into it, but it has a life expectancy, so you have to replace that little reed part of it, but you just blow into it and it makes the sound. God dang it, I forget the name of it. I'd have to go look at it. It's in the garage, but it's Blueberry Calls or it's not a Rocky Mountain.
Okay. I kind of know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but it's a tube, and I threw it over my shoulder. It was really good. I just felt like that reed should have lasted longer than the number of times that I blew into it.
Okay.
By the end of the trip, 5 days, and I didn't blow it a ton. I mean, I wasn't screaming like some of these people are. I was probably blowing it. I mean, there was days where I didn't even blow it at all.
Okay.
And so I just felt like the reed part portion of it should have stood up a little bit better. But that is coming from a guy who, this is my first bugle tube I've ever purchased. So maybe that's standard. A replacement reed did come with it. So I just had to replace it. And then, the only thing I have to do next year is buy more replacement reeds before I go out.
Gotcha. So I go a little differently. I use the mouth reed as well. I've got Primo's Sonic Dome, and I typically that's usually typically what I use to bugle with. And then I've just got like a standard like Rocky Mountain elk call like tube, no reed built into it. I just and then I run a second reed. I think that one is by Rocky Mountain Elk Calls, and that's like the I don't know if it's the Raging Bull or the Mellow Mama or something like that, but it just makes some really nice cow calls. And that way those reeds sound completely different. So there were times like I bugle the bull in just with a bugling sequence, and I definitely switched reeds in between. Just to kind of throw things off a little bit. And even when I was cow call with both of them, and that's two different sounds as well. So,
yeah.
And that's a lot of feedback from my wife, because obviously she's the one listening to me the whole time when I'm calling.
Yeah.
But, depending on what I was doing, and you can bugle with both of them just fine. So,
yeah. Yeah. I didn't want to take the time to learn how to use diaphragm. So I just went with the bugle tube with the built-in reed and went from there. So
gotcha.
Other than that, man, any other products you want to talk about?
Do you run binos?
I do. Vortex. I'll probably run Vortex to the day I die for the pure fact that I could have thrown them off the mountain, went and found them, damaged, send them in, replace them for free. That warranty is unreal, right?
Right. Yeah.
But I did experience what my buddy, he had a pair of Zeiss's. I think it was Zeiss or Swarovski's. I can't remember. But there is a difference in these ultra premium binoculars compared to something that's like, I think the ones that I had, I bought for $200. And those that he had were probably closer to $1,000. And for those binos, there is a difference, and it allows you to see a little bit more detail at longer distances. Because there was a time I was looking through my binos. I'm like, is that a cow elk bedded down way over there? And then he hands me his binos. I look in the same area, and it's a log. No doubt or a log, right? So
yeah.
Vortex, I'm sure, makes a higher caliber bino than what I actually have, but I don't know. I'm happy with the way they work, and I use them for, it's a one-stop shop for, everything. I could get away with them out there. I only picked up my binoculars two times that whole trip.
Gotcha.
So it wasn't like it was a game changer.
Yeah. I mean, and then I think with elk hunting, it depends on what terrain you're in. If you're going to do a lot of glassing, I could see spending some extra money and even running like a higher powered set of binos. I run the 10 by 42s. I've got Leupold. It's like the BX3. They're a little bit more of a, they're a medium price point. My wife runs the Vortex Diamondbacks. It kind of sounds like what you have, and she could tell a little bit different difference. They even feel a little bit, my Leupolds even feel a little bit more lightweight. So, we weren't running any spotting scopes, and gosh, we were actually in quite a bit of timber that it's not really a big reason to have binos. So just middle of the day, sitting there, something to do. Glassing. It's nice to have good glass.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Now, the story might change a little bit. I got a Vortex spotting scope too that I'll be using on my South Dakota mule deer hunt coming up. So I'm going to be doing a lot more glassing on this next hunt. So I'll report back. But I'm just a huge fan of Vortex, not only for their products, but just for their customer service and that warranty. You really can't beat it. So,
right. Yep.
So other than that, I don't have too much. I don't have really anything to talk about. You?
No, not really. I didn't, I've got game bags and knives and stuff like that, but I didn't get to use any
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, right, so. Right. Once I get to use some of that stuff, I'll have an opinion on it. But now I have a brand new buck knife that I bought 2 years ago that I don't even know if it's been out. Well, I take it back. I used it to to gut my deer in the field last year, but yeah. That's the only time it's been taken out of its sheath.
Yeah, I've got a Havilon with their replacement blades that I bought this year because I was like, yeah, it's a lighter weight option. I didn't get to use that, and then I signed up for a Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation membership, and with it, I got a free skinning knife that I brought with me, but also didn't get to skin anything. So,
right.
Maybe during whitetail season, I'll get to put those to use.
Absolutely. All right, Mr. Bob Polanek, thanks for doing this today. And for all the listeners, guys, why don't you go to the Sportsman's Nation Facebook page or the Nine Finger Chronicles Facebook page when I launch this episode and let us know how your gear's working out. If you have any products that you like, any products that you dislike, as much as I like hearing the positives of products, I also like hearing true hunters talk about what they dislike about products too, because that is like, I rely on what a lot of people say and reviews that I see online about products to actually make my decisions on what I purchase as well. So anytime I get some honest feedback from somebody, whether it's positive or negative, I like that.